don't know why I cry so, but I do. I only know I'm lonely, and that I want you only. I don't know why I love you, but I do.
Okay, folks, you were just listening to a little bit of Clarence Frogman Henry singing I Don't Know Why I Love You, But I Do. And this is Atrevida, and you're listening to Conversations on a Tightrope. This is Valentine's Day. And do you love me? And if not, who do you love? Everybody's going to be sending cards, expressing their love, whether it be a loving, intimate relationship or just loving your children or your parents. But love is in the air, and I thought this would be the perfect day to talk about just that. If we look back at the history of Valentine's Day, it wasn't all about candy and cupids. It came from a dark and bloody place. It has not been pinpointed exactly when it started, but ancient Rome comes up where, well, men did not hit on women, they actually hit women. From February 13 to 15, Romans celebrated the feast of Lupercalia. A goat and dog was sacrificed, and then the men whipped women with the hides of the animals they had just slain. They would be drunk and naked, and the women would line up to be hit, believing this would make them fertile. There would be a matchmaking lottery, drawing women's names from a jar, and they would couple up for the rest of the evening. Also, the name Valentine's Day is so far attributed to the Romans when the Emperor Claudius II executed two men, both named Valentine, on February 14 of different years in the 3rd century A.D. Their martyrdom was honored with the celebration of Valentine's Day. But finally, Shakespeare romanticized the day with Shakespeare in Love and Chaucer in his works, and it became popular throughout Europe. In 1913, Hallmark of Kansas City, Missouri, began mass-producing Valentine cards. Now, history aside, for those of you who are in love, congrats, and I hope you and your mate are living up to the demands of our commercially exploited Valentine's Day. But for those of you who are not in love, and not obsessed with finding love, and that includes your host, remember that there are many pluses being unattached, the most important being that you, and you alone, control whether you go down Misery Lane or on the Sanity Express. Let me be clear. I'm not saying love is not a good thing. On the contrary, it is a vital part of being alive. But there are many kinds of love. And if you obsess yourself with the highly overrated romantic love quest, you are in for a first-class ticket on a roller coaster ride with no brakes. Let me inject a little dark humor and play a short audio uploaded on YouTube by Daniel Gardner in 2007 entitled Valentine's Day Pain. Remember, you may end up sounding like this if you don't get your head out of the clouds and back to reality. Let's listen.
Valentine's Day. It's that one day in the year where you mean so much to someone that they are willing to spend money on you. I hereby prove I am a capable companion for the rest of your life by buying you 12 insignificant pieces of chocolate. This day, of all days, I will express my love by writing poems. Every other verse is, I need you so bad. You're beautiful. I need you so bad. So get ready for some couples walking around with that glazy-eyed, dazed look. You know that sound trucks make when they go into reverse? Beep, beep, beep. I think we ought to attach some sort of warning beep to to couples. The other day, I saw this car driving down Main Street, and written on the back was, "Just Married." That's the kind of warning label I'm talking about. We need various stages. Just met, just kissed, just engaged. There are glazy-eyed, dazed-faced couples walking on our streets. Be cautious. Couples have a thinking mentality. Cupids. Cupids are cute. They're naked babies with weapons of war. That's cute. No. You like that idea? Well, then let's update it with a more modern weapon of war. Yes, that's a Cupid with an Uzi. Isn't that darling? My goodness. One thing I like to watch is how couples are always asking questions about each other. It gets to the point where it's just plain ridiculous. "I just wanted to ask if you tied your shoes all by yourself this morning. I'm so sorry I wasn't there." You know how ladies go into the restroom to straighten their hair and all that? Not that I've ever been there myself. Well, guys actually go into the restroom to mess up their ties, unravel their collars, and, you know, make a mess of their hair so that when they come out, the girl will look at him and be like, "Oh, bless his heart, he needs to be cared for." And all this attention causes the guy to purr. This is my sister and her boyfriend, the family cat. What about guys who completely throw their sense of independence out the window when they get involved in a relationship? They can do absolutely nothing for themselves. "Well, excuse me if I lost the transitional period between dad. Leave me alone. I can do it by myself." And, "Sweetie, can you come do this for me? I think I need your help." It's like, they can't cross the road together. The guy has to be like, "Hang in there, sweetie. Look both ways. It's safe to go now. Step." Ha! Love it! Where was I? Right, Valentine's Day. Yeah, if you're still single, congratulations. Buy yourself some chocolate.
Okay, after that rant, let's now go forward with our feet on the ground. Since I'm big on science, I'd like to play a couple of audio clips on how neurotransmitters in our brain affect our emotional behavior when we are attracted to someone. This next audio talks about adrenaline, dopamine, and serotonin. It says on the YouTube website, "What happens in our bodies when we fall in love? Which molecules are involved in our feelings?" In the fifth video of the Chemistry Calendar, we explore the chemistry of love. The Chemistry Calendar is a joint project between Molecular Frontiers, Chalmers University of Technology, University of Gothenburg, and Universium. We work together with film company Untamed Science to launch a video per month during the International Year of Chemistry 2011. So after that credit, here goes.
What makes us drawn to a particular person? Well, if you ask that question to 1,000 people, you may get 1,000 different answers.
But being in love is actually one of the strongest feelings possible. And even though we typically think of love being in our heart, the chemistry of love has actually a lot more to do with our brain.
And the reason we start to act all funny when we find someone special can actually be explained chemically. Let's look at three different molecules that play a big role in human attraction. Adrenaline, dopamine, and serotonin.
If you've ever wondered why people act so goofy when they bump into someone they're attracted to, it's not entirely their fault. When this happens, adrenaline is released in the body by signals from the brain. This is actually the body activating a stress response, and we feel our heart rate increase and we begin to sweat. Even if sweating may not be something we really wish to do when trying to impress someone we like. Well, another molecule related to adrenaline is dopamine, a natural feel-good substance released in the brain as we fall in love. Dopamine is the reward molecule. It makes us want to repeat things that have made us feel good. But high dopamine concentrations are also connected to focused attention, obsessive thinking, sleeplessness, and loss of appetite. Does this sound familiar? When we fall in love, there seems not to be a thing in the world that could bring us down. Life is just great, and we can't stop thinking of that special one. Well, we can partly thank our third chemical for that, serotonin.
But what is really happening in our body when these molecules are released? Well, I know just the person to ask.
I'm meeting up with Andrew Ewing, who is a professor in analytical chemistry.
These molecules dopamine, serotonin, and adrenaline. They're neurotransmitters in the brain. Neurotransmitters are molecules that signal between two nerve cells, whether it's in the brain or in the nerve system in the body.
When a nerve signal is sent in the body, the neurotransmitters transmit the signal across small gaps between the nerve cells. Neurotransmitters then have specific receptors on the receiving nerve cells, making sure that only the right nerve signal is passed on. Kind of like a lock and key. Only the right key will open the right door and continue the signal. But what really happens in our body when we fall in love?
Well, that's when your brain sends all the signals to your body for you to for action. And so that's why you have the adrenaline rush. Adrenaline comes out and your palms get sweaty and your heart rate increases. You get tunnel vision. You zero in on that person. That's who you're looking at. And then after a little while, then you get this euphoria, and that's serotonin. And that's also rewarding, and so you get some dopamine involved, although it's probably more a time-again reward with dopamine.
Well, it turns out that the effect of these little chemicals in our brain could be so strong that some scientists even recommend that we avoid making big decisions during this stage. We're acting under the influence of love chemicals.
But these molecules are not just important in explaining why we act and feel the way we do when we fall in love. They also provide insight in many other physiological effects.
A rapid increase in adrenaline, for example, is our body's way to prepare for a fight or flight situation. That is why our heart rate increases and we feel knee weak when doing something scary. Hey, falling in love is pretty scary, isn't it? The discovery of dopamine's role as a neurotransmitter gave Arvid Carlsson from Gothenburg in Sweden the Nobel Prize in 2000. And get this, serotonin has now been used to help treat, for example, depression.
Well, even though chemistry might not explain why we fall in love, we've learned that being in love depends a lot more on chemistry than you may have thought.
Then there is kissing. A kiss once made me go insane, so I found the next audio really interesting. It is Cheryl Kirschenbaum, the author of The Science of Kissing, and uploaded by Hatchet Book Group on January 7, 2011. On the website, it says, Cheryl Kirschenbaum reports that kissing is one of the most intimate expressions between two people, inspiring all forms of art, from music to painting, and especially to literature, shaping both history and legend. We're exchanging pheromones, she writes. In fact, when we're engaged, our bodies release a cocktail of chemicals related to social bonding, stress level, motivation, and sexual stimulation. We become, in effect, under the influence. It's powerful. I'm now going to play a 3-minute clip, The Science of Kissing, What Our Lips Are Telling Us.
Well, I think many of us are interested in kissing from an early age, but I write for Discover magazine, so I'm often covering timely topics like why leaves change color in the autumn, or how beer affects your brain around St. Patrick's Day. And so I did a piece a few years ago on the science of kissing around Valentine's Day, and it just took off. The emails poured in. Very soon, scientists themselves were calling me to find out what I was learning, and an event was organized by the American Association for the Advancement of Science in Washington, D.C., specifically on this topic. And it just never stopped. I kept getting more and more questions, and soon it seemed like an obvious topic with broad appeal because it's a near universal human behavior. So why not look at it from a variety of lenses? Well, in one chapter, I got a very brave neuroscientist from New York University to sign on to allow me to work with his lab to conduct a neuroscience experiment on how the brain responds to watching two people kissing. Now, of course, we couldn't put two people in, it's called an MEG machine, and have them kiss, but we could show volunteers different images of couples kissing. So some might look more erotic, some might look a lot more friendly, and couples could be of different genders and different matches. And the machine measures the magnetic current in volunteers' brains. And so I expected that men would have a much stronger response to more visually erotic photos, whereas women might not show that. But what we found was entirely different, extremely surprising, and I shouldn't really go into because it's one of my favorite parts of the book, and we're also going to be publishing the research soon. But it's something I'm really looking forward to sharing. One of the biggest misconceptions, which was also one of the funniest aspects of writing the book for me, came when I spoke to an evolutionary psychologist at the University of New York at Albany. And Dr. Gordon Gallup was looking at preferences between genders and surveyed thousands of undergraduates, as it turned out. But it ended up correlating across much, much broader audiences that men and women view kissing very differently. So men tend to see it as a means to an end, so maybe they're swapping saliva to swap other bodily fluids later, whereas women try to extricate the significance of their relationship based on a single kiss. And often that leads to a lot of miscommunication and extraordinarily funny anecdotes, which I do explore a little more in the book.
Oh, how I wish I knew all this stuff way back when I was young and stubborn.
Give me a little kiss, will you, huh? What are you gonna miss? Will your heart gush? Oh, gee, why do you refuse? I can't see what you got to lose. Give me a little squeeze. But what's a little kiss between a fella and his girl? Oh, give me a little kiss, will you, hon? And I'll give it right back to you. Give me a little kiss, will you, hon? What are you gonna miss, will you? Why do you refuse? I can't see what you got to lose. Oh, give me a little squeeze, will you, huh? Why do you want to make me blue? I wouldn't say a word if I were asking for the world. But what's a little kiss between a fella and his girl?
That song was called Gimme a Little Kiss, Will Ya, Huh? by Deanna Durbin. It says on Wikipedia, Deanna Durbin, born Edna Mae Durbin, December 4, 1921, is a Canadian-born, Southern California-raised, retired singer and actress who appeared in a number of musical films in the 1930s and 40s, singing standards as well as operatic arias. As far as I could find, she is still around and in her 90s. Now, perfume is developed to do all these things these scientists have been talking about. So in the spirit of fun on Valentine's Day, let's listen to the University of Nottingham scientists who all contribute something to what they call the chemically perfect perfume. This was uploaded on YouTube February 2011, and listen for the following ingredients. 1. Hippodamine comes from ladybirds. Vanillin chemical and vodka. Citronello and cinnamaldehyde. Molecule gives color and the smell of cinnamon. Boron trioxide. Chocolate. Theobromine, which is caffeine and makes your heart go a flutter. Eugenol, pale yellow liquid, smells nice, plus a little bling, platinum, hexachloroplatinic acid. Then there is an secret ingredient X and direct red 23. They call it Mendeleev's dream. Dmitri Mendeleev was born at Tobolsk, Siberia in 1834 and died in 1907. He was best known for his work on the periodic table. So let us listen to this.
It's Valentine's Day, and we want to do something special to make a perfume, something that will really turn all the viewers on, if only you could smell it. Making perfume is pretty skilled. If you make really posh ones, you need lots of components so it lasts all day. The cheap ones just evaporate quickly. Once you're out of the shop, it's gone. So let's see what we can do. And Sam has found a great bottle. And this is the bottle in which we're each going to put in something to make the periodic table of videos perfume.
I thought a bit laterally today, and I've got here a natural product. It comes from ladybirds, and ladybirds use it to signal to each other to tell them to congregate so it attracts ladybirds. So this is called a hypodamine. It's one of about five or six molecules that they make and use for this sort of thing. So I'm going to put this into our potion. If it works for ladybirds, who knows? Maybe it'll work for ladies. Just drop that in there.
I'm going to use vanillin. Vanillin is chemical that gives vanilla its flavour. I feel that this will suggest chocolate and ice cream and make people feel really quite good. But it's a solid, so we've got to dissolve it in something to make the perfume. Usually people use a mixture of alcohol and water as the basis of a perfume. I shall use my Mendeleev vodka. It's a nice white solid, the vanillin. Let's mix some in.
This is citronellol, and this is a classic smell of lemons, you know? It's that amazing zesty smell that really, really is beautiful. But it's very strong and very intense, so we don't need very much of it. Valentine's Day is about romance, you know, and the next molecule I wanted to put in was one which is quite nostalgic for me, because it's a molecule that I work on quite a lot. Not only is it going to give a warm tone to the perfume, but it's also going to give some colour, and that molecule itself is cinnamaldehyde. So this is the smell of cinnamon cookies and apple pie. This is incredibly intense smell. So here we go, we're going to add it to the mixture, just a few drops. There's my contribution, Brady. Let's give it a bit of a mix, and you can see the colour of the cinnamaldehyde already starting to come into the mixture.
Here's our perfume so far, and the thing that I'm going to put in into the perfume is boron trioxide. Probably know if you've seen my boron video that I do have a love of boron, so on Valentine's Day maybe I'll get a little bit of boron. Boron doesn't usually come in perfume very much, but I thought I'd try and put a little bit of a boron compound in. Say about that much in. There it goes. Make sure that's on for you.
So I'm going to add some of my lunch, which happens to be a bar of chocolate, a traditional Valentine's gift. So, why chocolate? Well, of course, it's got a chemical basis, and here's the compound I'm interested in. It's called theobromine. There's no bromine in it, it just happens to be the name of the molecule, because the plant is called theobroma. So it's very similar to caffeine. If we swap this hydrogen with a methyl, we've got caffeine, and how it works is very similar to caffeine. It makes your heart beat a little bit faster, and your blood vessels dilate, so you get a little bit lightheaded, just very much like falling in love, apparently. So I'm going to go to the lab, melt some chocolate, and add it, because even the smell is really enticing, okay? I'm going to take a couple of drops and add it to the love perfume there, the love potion. One, two, three, I think.
All right, so I'm going to add a compound called eugenol, and it smells quite nice. So you can see it's kind of a pale yellow liquid. I don't know if you can see that. Okay, I've put in three drops. So what I'm going to add now is I'm going to add a little bit of bling to our perfume. So what I'm going to add is some platinum. So what I've got in here is a solution of a material called hexachloroplatinic acid. I think it's going to add a little bit of glamour to the perfume, because, you know, platinum jewelry is obviously very popular at the minute, very expensive. So we're going to have the world's first perfume that actually contains platinum.
Hey, all right. It actually smells quite nice. I'm getting notes. It's flowery. It's not unpleasant, actually. I don't know if I wouldn't use it, but it looks weird. So I think there needs to be something to cheer it up a bit. Given that we're talking about Valentine's and love, the colour that's associated with love and passion is red. We've got here Direct Red 23, which is a dye. It's kind of a very dark colour. I've no idea how much to put into this, so we'll just trial and error, see what happens if we put this in. It went from being this really horrible, kind of unappetizing, unattractive, almost yellow colour to something now, you look at it, it looks red. Okay, it's a bit, maybe it's a bit like blood, but actually, when you think about love, you think that red is the colour of love.
You got an idea for the name of our perfume, by the way?
Of course. The perfume will be called Mendeleev Stream.
Mendeleev's Dream.
Of course, if it doesn't work, you can always ask the Sandman to help you out. And here are the quartets, which was recorded around 1954.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Please turn on your magic beam, Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him the word that I'm not a nights are over, Sandman. I'm so alone, don't have nobody to call my own. Please turn on your magic beam, oh, Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Bum 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 bum.
Yes.
Bring us a dream. Give him a pair of eyes with a come hither gleam. Give him a lonely heart like Pagliacci. And lots of wavy hair like Liberace. Mr. Sandman, someone to hold.
Someone to hold.
Would be so peachy before we're too old. So please turn on your magic beam.
Stepping away from science, some good advice from a clinical psychologist may help spice life up for our love seekers. Therapist Diana Kirshner discusses her book, Love in 90 Days, which helps women find their true love. This was uploaded by Your Tango on January 14, 2009.
I'm Dr. Diana Kirshner, and my book is Love in 90 Days, The Essential Guide to Finding Your Own True Love. Yes, it is possible to find love in 90 days. The 90 Days program is a four-pronged approach. The first thing you do is you identify and break your deadly dating patterns. And some of the common ones include the flame-out, we meet a hottie, we jump in too soon, we're spending five-hour dates with him, we're having sex with him, it's unbelievable, and then disappears. Another one is called not perfect, I'll pass. And that's being really picky, 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 judgmental. No, you know, he spilled his coffee when we were at the Starbucks on him, so I can't really take another look at him. And then another one is crumbs. And that means that you settle for whatever you can get. Then you go on what I call a dating program of three. And in the dating program of three, you're going to actually date three guys at the same time without having sex with any of them. If you have sex, what can happen is that your body can start falling in love with that person before you even know who he is. That's what everybody says. What? Three guys? Come on. I can't even find one. You sign up for two online dating sites. I recommend one that is large, that is like Match.com, and then one that is a boutique site, so it's based on either your background or your interests. You also cultivate what I call your diamond self, which really helps you bust through shyness. You actually give yourself a name. It's kind of like doing what Queen Latifah did. Her real name is Dana Owens, but she gave herself a diamond self name. And you can see that it's very empowering. And then you also get yourself a love mentor. Now, this is somebody who is kind of like a fairy godmother who gives you the most profound support and really helps you find the one. People say if it's meant to happen, it would just happen. Now, in what other area of your life would you ever take that attitude? If I was meant to be fit, it would just happen. I would be fit. Well, you know, love isn't any different. You have to put yourself out there. And then, chances are, you will get lucky.
There was one interview with Dr. Diana I heard, and she was asked about her first kiss. She said it blew her away, and she would never forget the song, Unchained Melody Playing. So this is for Dr. Diana Kirshner, Unchained Melody by the Righteous Brothers. And for those of you who are feeling the love and are in a committed relationship, may I offer you My Prayer by The Platters, one of the most beautiful love songs I have ever heard.
When the twilight is gone, and no songbirds are singing, when the twilight is gone, you come into my heart, and here in my heart you will stay while I pray. My prayer is to linger with you at the end of the day, in a dream that's divine. In blue, with the world far away, and your lips close to mine. Same for as long as we live, that you'll always be there at the end of my prayer. And
for those of you who have a special evening planned, there is Carly Simon's Anticipation.
We can never know about the days to come, but we think about them.
For those of you who are having or will have a Rotten Tomatoes Valentine's Day, and you're feeling wounded, let's listen to Carly Simon sing Hurt. I have an announcement that is not related to Valentine's Day, but first I would like to introduce a musician from the 70s to the 90s. He played violin, piano, and was also a vocalist. I was privileged in his early days in 1979 to see him in a cozy social club in Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn, New York. I happened upon his album the other day and sadly found out that he had died in 1994 from a stroke at only 39 years old, but not before his many accomplishments. His name is Noel Pointer. This is a quick bio. Born December 26, 1954 in Brooklyn, New York, and died December 19, 1994. He was an American jazz violinist and record producer. He was nominated for a Grammy Award in 1981. Pointer's reputation as an outstanding jazz musician and literary advocate garnered him honorary citizenship in cities across the United States. He received special citations from the U.S. Congress, the U.S. Congressional Black Caucus, the African National Congress, and numerous other civic and private organizations. He served as a music advisory panelist for the National Endowment for the Arts and the United States Information Agency. At age 13, he made his solo debut performing Vivaldi with the Symphony of the New World Orchestra, followed by guest solo appearances with the Chicago Chamber Orchestra and Detroit Symphony Orchestra. He began playing jazz on the violin while a student at New York City's High School of Music and Art. By age 19, his experience as a freelance musician had included steady work in the Apollo Theater Orchestra, the Unlimited Orchestra, the Westbury Music Fair Orchestra, the Radio City Music Hall Symphony, the Love Unlimited Orchestra, U.S. Tour, the Dance Theater of Harlem Orchestra, the Symphony of the New World Orchestra, and the pit orchestras of several Broadway shows, including Guys and Dolls. For those of you who will be having a quiet evening with someone special at home, why not add something new for your listening and dancing pleasure? Noel does some serious five-string electric violin playing in Captain Jarvis. Enjoy. Thank you. Before I forget, putting Valentine's Day aside, I would like to remind you that on March 24th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the National Mall in Washington, D.C., there will be the Reason Rally, and it could be one of the largest ever celebrations of secular values in our nation's capital. Speaking will be Richard Dawkins, who is the author of The Selfish Gene, The Blind Watchmaker, The God Delusion, The Greatest Show on Earth, and more, and founder of the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science. Adam Savage, Mythbusters co-host and skeptic superstar. Taslima Nazrin, author of more than 30 books, prolific activist for gender equality, free thought, and human rights. James Randi, creator of the $1 million Paranormal Challenge. He's a magician known as the Amazing Randi, and he also started the James Randi Educational Foundation. P.Z. Myers, blogger at Farangula, professor of biology at the University of Minnesota, Morris. Dan Barker, who is a co-president of Freedom from Religion Foundation. Dan preached for 19 years. He announced his atheism publicly in January 1984. He tells his story in the books Losing Faith in Faith and Godless. Annie Laurie Gaylor, she's also co-president of Freedom from Religion Foundation. Christina Rad, who is a Romanian YouTube sensation. And Bad Religion, rock band fronted by singer-songwriter Greg Graffin. Tim Minchin, traveling from London to Washington, D.C. He's a musician, composer, songwriter, actor, comedian, and writer. And he is best known for his 9-minute beat poem, Storm, which I had previously aired on one of my atheism shows. Paul Provenza, host and producer of The Green Room, with Paul Provenza on Showtime, and producer of the movie The Aristocrats, has signed on to be one of the MCs for the Reason Rally. That's just some of the guests that will be there. There's also just recently Congressman Pete Stark of California, who will do a video because he cannot be there personally, and he is the only member of Congress that is a professed atheist. I wanted to make sure I didn't forget that announcement. I'll make another one next month.